Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. Here's a quick announcement. Our special Mother's Day May edition of the heart-centered and passion-driven Inspirations for a Better Living digital magazine designed to help moms build a better future for themselves, their families, and loved ones is now live at inspirationsforbetterliving.com. May's theme is a Mother's Day special, Living a Legacy of Love. The magazine offers inspirational stories from our dedicated team of experts to help you navigate your current situation with confidence in your motherhood journey as the COO, if not the CEO, of your family. So please go to inspirationsforbetterliving.com and treat yourself to some engaging, entertaining, and enlightening stories. You deserve it. As for our radio show this morning, my guest for today's Mother's Day special show is Alicia Lyons. Alicia wears many hats. She's a mother, a business owner, an author, and a life coach. Being a mom has been the greatest, most rewarding one. Besides seeing her son, Xandra, thrive, she is joyful about motherhood. Alicia's personal motherhood journey began when she said yes to a home-based business after being fed up with corporate America. She was attached to the freedom and flexibility of working for herself. One of Alicia's most rewarding contributions to life is giving life. After discovering the difficulties families face in having babies, she decided to become a surrogate mom for parents who wanted a family but were facing maternity challenges. Alicia tapped into her motherly instincts and realized she could make a difference in these families' lives. Acting on her maternal love, she became a surrogate mom for four fortunate families and, with the last one, gave birth to twin girls. Besides bringing happiness and joy to these families, Alicia experiences joy and happiness each time, knowing she's fulfilling her desire to build a better world. Alicia is also one of our featured expert contributors for our special Mother's Day May edition, Inspirations for Better Living magazine. Please go to inspirationsforbetterliving.com and read her inspiring and empowering story, My Mother, My Best Friend, Celebrating a Unique Bond in the Mom Support Corner section. As for our kitchen table conversation, this morning, Alicia and I will be talking about her remarkable life's journey and how she became a surrogate mom for four fortunate families and giving birth to twin girls with the last one. Happy Wednesday, Alicia, and welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. It is exciting, wonderfully, wonderfully well to have you on the air with me. Like all our listeners, I'm excited to learn more about you, your journey to becoming a surrogate mom, and your passion for helping moms in their motherhood journey.
Yeah, you know, growing up, I watched all that my mom did for the family, and you know, even though it wasn't necessarily a conscious thought at the time, it's like, you know, I realized it was a difficult and kind of thankless job. And my love for her just created this soft spot that I had for moms in general. So I knew that when I started my coaching business that I really wanted to work with moms. And through my own struggle of getting pregnant, I knew I wanted to help other moms or other families grow. So that's a tiny...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Just a quick little bit extra about me.
Wonderful. Well, you know what? We're going to go into a little bit deeper than that. How about this? Please give us a walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Yeah. So I am number three of technically six kids. My parents split when I was a year old, and they both remarried. And so I gained a step sister, and then 8 years later, I gained a half brother and a half sister. So there was, including my two brothers, there was six of us total. And so at one point I was the baby, and at one point I was the middle child. So that gave an interesting dynamic of my personality. But we went back and forth between my mom's house and my dad's house. My dad was a pastor for 40 some years. My mom was a teacher. And, you know, all of us kids, we kind of got along pretty well. We were all really, really good kids. And I was the one that, like, I followed my mom around the house while she was doing chores. And as an adult and as a mom, I'm like, how come I didn't help? But it didn't cross my mind while I was a kid, for sure. I just loved spending the time with her and chatting. And just, you know, I don't even know if she gave me any advice. It was just that connection time. And I had some auditory processing going on where I would just talk about my problems and she would listen. And it wasn't necessarily about the advice, but just spending time with her and talking.
Very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. So who were the major influences in your life when you were growing up?
Major influences. You know, I found people in general fascinating. Mm-hmm. I was connected to so many people through the church. Just a couple that popped into my head at this moment is my next door neighbor, and his wife. They were always just so nice to me. I could go next door and grab a cookie anytime I wanted to. And I had heard a story that I didn't know. I don't recall this at all, but when we were blending my dad and my stepmom and my stepsister, when that family was blending, mm-hmm. Our next door neighbor took us out, all the kids out camping so that we could all kind of get to know each other. And, you know, that's obviously not something that he had to do by any means, but it was something that was that he knew was important for blending a family. And then every Sunday we would go from my mom would pick us up from my dad's house, and we would drive up the hill about 30 minutes to my grandma's house, and we would have dinner with my grandma and grandpa. And that was always just kind of those three people were really big influences in my life growing up.
Fascinating. How has your relationship with your mom changed over the years?
You know, I'd say it went from, I had some codependency in my early adults period where I leaned heavily on her in some of the harder times in my life. Mm-hmm. And I actually saw the stress that was putting on her because, you know, when your kid is hurting, you're hurting.
Right.
And so, so I started looking for other ways to get my emotional needs met. And so I went to therapy a couple of times and I got into the coaching world. And so, you know, as I've always known that my mom hated talking on the phone. And when I was codependent, I didn't care. I made her talk on the phone with me until I felt complete. And then as I've gotten, additional support, I don't call her unless it's something that needs to be like spoken over the phone. So I'll text her or I'll go up to her and make plans to go to her house. And like just last, I think it was last weekend before last, we were, the whole family was up at her house, just mm-hmm. helping tend to the 5 acres that she takes care of. And, It's a lot of work to do kind of on your own. And so we were all up there pulling weeds and doing various other activities.
Well, that's wonderful. I think sometimes people don't realize it. You know, it's that I remember, and this has got nothing to do because it's that sort of family organization, right? Years ago, I've heard some stories, you know, Sunday dinner. Everybody got together. Well, before that, obviously everybody sits together for every meal. Mm-hmm. And then when it got to be difficult, then it's just Sunday dinner only. And then now, as you had mentioned, it's special events, whether it's helping mm-hmm. mom out or whatever. And it's kind of nice to hang out, and it's a family project, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely.
Very, very interesting. Yeah. Well, when did motherhood become a point of conversation for you?
Well, I always think it's kind of funny that I had, around the time I was 16 years old, I had convinced myself that I actually didn't want to be a mom. I had spent a lot of time babysitting other people's kids, and I quite frankly got burned out on being around other people's kids. So for 10 years, I had this thought, like, I do not want to be a mom. Kids are not in the picture for me. Honestly, biology kicked in, and 10 years later, I was like, oh yeah, I definitely want to be a mom. And, but I was still single, so I had to meet the father first. And, we met and got married and were living together within 6 months. And, I think we got married in August, and we were trying for our son by December of that year. But like I mentioned, it wasn't, well, part of the reason that I wanted to be a surrogate was because it wasn't easy for me to get pregnant. Like, it didn't happen immediately like I, you know, expected it to, which I think is the case for a lot of women, is that they think that, you know, you just, well, actually that's kind of like in my experience, it's like, you better be careful so you don't accidentally get pregnant. And it took a year and a half for us to conceive my son. And that was hard because I'm a very impatient person. And I had a friend that was pregnant, and I remember in December thinking, oh my gosh, we just made a baby. And it was a year and a half later before I finally got that positive pregnancy stick. Mm-hmm. And that there's a funny story that, you know, back in the days where you didn't have like Facebook on your phone, you had to log in on a computer to check your Facebook. And my sister came over and she used my computer, logged into Facebook, and she forgot to log out. So when I logged into what I thought was my Facebook, there was a girl on her feed that was 8 weeks along. And she was like, oh my gosh, can you see my baby bump? And I was like, unfriend, I'm not going to watch this for the next 9 months. Like, that's not happening. And then, so my sister had to have that awkward conversation with her friend on why she got unfriended.
Very, very interesting. Well, you talk about, you know, you have hints of, you know, things that you went through personally in your journey, right? So mm-hmm. how did you actually find out about surrogate moms?
So I was a massage therapist around the time that I was trying. I guess we were trying at that point. We at one point, maybe 2 or 3 months in, where we weren't getting pregnant, my husband said, okay, you're obsessing a little bit too much. So let's just make a deal that we're going to be happy with a kid and we're going to be happy without a kid. So if it happens, it happens. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. Which is probably one of the most profound things that he had said to me. Mm-hmm. And so I had put, you know, put it on the back burner, but I was a massage therapist and a surrogate mom came in to get a massage. And that poor woman, I picked her brain. I can't, I asked every single question that you could possibly ask. Because this was not something that I had heard of at that point. I mean, when I was 16 years old, I had told a friend of mine that I would have a baby for her, because I knew I didn't want to be a mom, but I kind of wanted to experience pregnancy. And so I was like, I'll have a baby for you. And because she didn't want to experience childbirth, but she wanted to be a mom.
Interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, we eventually both had our own children, but I picked this surrogate's brain. She and I are still friends. But I asked her all the questions that surrogates get asked. And I went home and I told my husband, I was so excited. I was like, I want to be a surrogate mom. And he was like, no. And so, you know, it was like, I put that in the back of my mind because my husband wasn't on board. And I didn't know that you really couldn't do it if you didn't have a kid of your own. I mean, you can, but it's very rare. And it's usually like for a family member or something. So after my son was born, we split up when he was 14 months old. And that was in, I believe, April of that year. By June, I was talking to a surrogacy agency. July, I was matched with a family. August, I was starting meds. And by September, I was pregnant. So I was ready.
That's very interesting, though. I mean, what intrigues you about surrogacy?
I had heard the stories. I'll be fully transparent. At the time, when I was picking her brain, it was just fascinating as far like the science behind it and that you could do that for somebody else. And then when I went through my divorce, I was self-employed and I had gone through a divorce before, and while being self-employed, and I knew that I didn't always feel like working and I needed the income. And so I was looking for a part-time job. And when I saw that an ad for surrogacy, I was like, that's what I'm going to do. So it was, at the time that I did it, there was a financial motivation, but just meeting the parents, the intended parents that I had the first baby for, they were trying for like 30 years to become a parent. And that just really tugged on my heartstrings. And it was, I just knew that I wanted to do it until the doctors told me I couldn't anymore.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. So can you walk us through the process? Out of curiosity, like, say, I mean, especially for me from a guy's perspective, but just for people to really understand the overall, you know, if we, as much as we could, so to speak.
Yeah, so typically families that struggle to conceive, some people do it because they don't want to experience pregnancy, I guess. That wasn't the experience that I had with any of the moms that I carried for, but they struggle to conceive for a while. A lot of times they go through in vitro on their own and they miscarry or they just don't ever get pregnant. And so they go through, the ones that I worked with, they go through an agency. And I think of the agency as like a dating service, but for surrogates and for intended parents and surrogates. So you create your profile, they create their profile, and different agencies do it differently, but every agency that I went through had the parents select the surrogate and there's an interview, like just to compatibility, get to know each other. And if it's a good fit for both, then you're matched. And if it's not for both, then it doesn't go through. After the matching process, there's the surrogate goes through physical clearance and a psychological clearance and maybe something else. I know those two things. And then there's, so you get the physical clearance and the psychological clearance, and then there's the contracts, the legal clearance. So contracts are signed. You usually start, depending on the cycle, you'll start meds. And different doctors do different types of meds, but the meds that worked for me were always injections. And so as if you want to be a surrogate, then, you know, either being comfortable with needles or being comfortable with someone else poking you with a needle is a must. I have a little control tendencies, so I only had two people ever do an injection for me. Everything else I did on my own. I was like, I need the control. I need to know when it's happening. No sneak attacks for me. And then throughout the pregnancy, you go, it kind of becomes, once the fertility doctor confirms the heartbeat, they usually release you to your regular OB. And then it's kind of very similar to a regular pregnancy. You just do what the OB says. I only had one parent come with me to all of the appointments because all of my other parents were international. So they stayed in their country while I was pregnant and then came for the birth or to pick up the baby after birth. And once in the birthing process, it's up to the, a lot of the things are up to the surrogate on if you want the parent in the parents in the room or not. There's a lot of things that you do get a choice about. And, a lot of those things are discussed pre-contract. So like if the intended parents want you to do a natural birth, then they might have that in the contract. If they want you to only eat organic food, then that would be in the contract. And then depending on the couple, typically you get about an hour to say goodbye to the baby. And there's the relationship that you have postpartum with the family is completely up to you and the family. And I've experienced just about every type you can. One, I never really saw the baby again. One, I saw the baby, I got pictures of the baby for a year. And then the last two, I've been getting updates on the children for the last 4 years for one and year, or 5 years for one and a year and a half for the other. That's in a nutshell.
Fantastic. That sounds really wonderful. I didn't realize that you could do surrogacy for international parents. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
There's a lot of other countries where surrogacy is illegal. I think to be a surrogate might be illegal. But I had babies for people in Spain and the Philippines.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Well, respectfully, it is generally a business transaction, like you say. How did you process the 9 months?
Well, it really helped that I didn't want more children, I think. And to me, it's about the mindset, because that's a question that a lot of people ask or they don't really ask it. They more give a statement like, I couldn't do it because I would get too attached to the baby. And like I said, the mindset for me is like, this isn't my baby. Like, it's their cookie dough and I'm the oven. And And this last time with the twins, that this is the first time that they've lived close enough that I could actually be part of their lives. So I've seen them several times in person and gotten to hold them a couple of times since they were born. But yeah, just processing the 9 months is for me, pregnancy's been fairly easy. With the twins, there's slightly more nausea, morning sickness. But half the time I would just forget that I was pregnant and, you know, kind of go about my life. But this last time there was a book that I was reading. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but there was a book that was, you know, talking about the stages of development and things that it was kind of like personal development while you're pregnant. And it was really an interesting book to read. And I didn't get past the first couple of chapters, because nausea just took over my world. but it was a very fascinating book, that helped. The premise is that, you know, things that mom is going through really does affect the baby. And so I wanted to do my best to have calmness and to the best of my ability and not go through, you know, a lot of difficulties or managing my emotions a lot and expressing them, because I think all of that is really important.
Very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. You're listening to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. I'm Johnny Tan, your host. Our podcast are available on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podtail, Player FM, TuneIn Radio, Mixcloud, Listen Notes, and Hophopper. Here's a quick reminder to treat yourself to our special Mother's Day May edition of the heart-centered and passion-driven Inspirations for Better Living digital magazine at inspirationsforbetterliving.com. May's theme is a Mother's Day special, Living a Legacy of Love. My guest for today is Alicia Lyons. Alicia wears many hats. She's a mother, a business owner, an author, and a life coach. Being a mom has been the greatest, most rewarding one. Besides seeing her son, Xandra, thrive, she is joyful about motherhood. Alicia's personal motherhood journey began when she said yes to a home-based business after being fed up with corporate America. She was attracted to the freedom and flexibility of working for herself. One of Alicia's most rewarding contributions to life is giving life. After discovering the difficulties family faced in having babies, she decided to become a surrogate mom for parents who wanted a family but was facing maternity challenges. Alicia tapped into her motherly instincts and realized she could make a difference in these families' lives. Acting on her maternal love, she became a surrogate mom for four fortunate families, and with the last one giving birth to twin girls. Besides bringing happiness and joy to these families, Alicia also experiences joy and happiness each time, knowing that she's fulfilling her desire to build a better world. Alicia is also one of our featured expert contributors to our special Mother's Day May edition, Inspirations for Better Living magazine. Please go to inspirationsforbetterliving.com to read her inspiring and empowering story, My Mother, My Best Friend, Celebrating a Unique Bond, in the Mom Support Corner section. In our kitchen table conversation this morning, Alicia and I are talking about her remarkable life journey and how she became a surrogate mom for four fortunate families and giving birth to twin girls with the last one. Alicia, what changed within you that otherwise would not have happened, if you think about it, if you were not a surrogate mom for the first time?
It's really hard to even think about that because it's been such a huge part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I might have had more kids of my own.
Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy being pregnant, and I've not to imply that I didn't or don't enjoy being a mom, but
yeah.
I did know that I didn't want to be outnumbered by my children, so I enjoy just it being my son and I. That's a really good question. I had never thought about where I would be if I hadn't done surrogacy, but I've written a book. It's currently being edited for people who've thought about the surrogacy process or thought about becoming a surrogate and really answering all the questions that they have, because that's definitely one thing that every surrogate experiences, a lot of questions. And I love telling my stories, and if it helps more women decide to give this amazing gift, then I'll be really happy. But I think that I wouldn't have fulfilled at least a part of my purpose here on Earth if I hadn't gone through and been a surrogate.
Interesting. Can you tell us your first experience giving birth to a child and then knowing that you have to give up and not be able to have any contacts again?
Well, I'll be honest that that's not how that was supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
In the contract, I was supposed to get an hour to say goodbye, and they were supposed to give me updates for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew just from previous experience that basically with birthing my son that I might go into labor early, because I gave birth at 38 weeks with my son. So when the dad, who I was in communication with him the most, when he said that he scheduled their flight for the due date, I was like, oh no, you need to reschedule that. You need to come at least 2 weeks earlier. And he didn't listen. And so I went into labor, at 38 weeks. And so when they came, by the time they got there, a couple of days had gone by, and I was anxious to leave the hospital to get back to my baby. So I had, after the baby was born, they gave her to me. I had a friend in the room. She held the baby a lot. And then I gave the baby the first bottle, and she fell asleep. And at that moment, I was like, oh, this is like the best. This is the thing that I loved the most about my son being a newborn, was when he would fall asleep when he'd eat. And so at that point I thought, okay, somebody take the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And they took her to the nursery, and that was last time I saw her. And had I known that was the last time I was going to see her, I would have taken that time really to say goodbye. But I didn't know. I waited for the parents to contact me or to contact the agency, and they never contacted either of us. And so the way that I kind of talk about it, I say they took the baby and ran. So that was hard, to kind of process, but, I did have access to a therapist to kind of work through it. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I got a cold after after that that lasted, and my voice was gone for like 5 weeks. And I went to, I don't know what she calls herself, but just a non-traditional healer, and or maybe a traditional healer, depending on your perspective. And she told me, she said, you know, when you have a cold, it's because you're sad. And so you're in this position right now where your mind agreed to carry a baby and give it to somebody else, but your body didn't sign up for that. So your body is missing that baby. And when I acknowledged that and kind of had this conversation with my body, like, it's okay, like, we agreed to this and that baby belongs to somebody else, I've got my voice back. It was just, it was so fascinating. But like I said, that was a unique experience, and I don't know that a lot of surrogates go through that specifically or anything like that specifically. The second mom, she agreed to give me updates for a year, and she did. And because she was giving me those updates for the year, I actually thought it was going to continue, because there was no like goodbye email or anything. But I stopped hearing from her after a year. So I thought that was kind of interesting. She stuck to the letter of the contract. And both of those parents were lawyers, which I always thought was a little bit funny, because they were very similar in this being a transaction, where the other two moms have been a lot more relational in their communication with me. Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, please tell us about the last surrogacy you did, delivering twin girls.
Yeah, that was a shock when the
I guess
total
people,
transparency here.
Let me answer this. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, people don't plan like, okay, I want a surrogate to carry twins, do they?
Sometimes they do.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes, basically, I mean, my first pregnancy, or for surrogacy, there was two eggs transferred, a boy and a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And the boy didn't attach and the girl did, but she split. And
okay.
But the second baby never had a heartbeat. So technically that baby was going to be twins also, but the second baby never had a heartbeat.
I see.
But a lot of parents do. I think that, you know, it's not, it is not a inexpensive process.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have two at the same time, depending on the contract, it only adds, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 more of what the parents are paying, versus if you do two rounds, you're paying the whole kit and caboodle twice.
So
it makes financial sense to have two at once if you want more than one kid. Yeah.
Right. Interesting. I mean, I'm just saying from the standpoint, people want to have a child, and then, you know, it's like normal, right? And then all of a sudden, you got twins.
Yeah, that's, so that's kind of what happened with this last journey. The mom was a single mom, and is a single mom, and she had, if I'm not mistaken, she had three good embryos.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them she tried to carry and miscarried. And a friend of hers said that soul was going to come back to her. And at that point, she decided to have a surrogate. And we hit it off immediately. And they transferred one egg. And at the 6-week mark, I will never forget that doctor's face when she mm-hmm. told us that it was that there were two heartbeats, there were two babies. And I can still, like, I'm still getting over the shock of that because that was not part of my plan by any means. But that soul indeed did come back to her. And you know, it was for me, the whole process, I was very consumed with, mm-hmm. How the babies are getting out. And I didn't like any of the options because, you know, there's, you know, vaginal birth.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, well, my favorite part of a vaginal birth is like the relief that you feel when the baby is out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I just, in my head, I kept having Phoebe from Friends playing in my head, like, I already had a baby, leave me alone. Like, that was how I felt I was gonna, mm-hmm. that it was going to be like. And then sometimes you'll have a vaginal birth first, and then the second baby will have to be a C-section.
Oh,
and
wow.
That mm-hmm. was not okay as far as I was concerned. I didn't want both. But I also didn't want a C-section, so I kept joking with the doctor that I wanted I wanted them to teleport out of my stomach. that's obviously not what happened. I did end up with a C-section. But every time I would think about any of the birthing options, I would, you know, for me, it was almost panic inducing. And so I had to remind myself, today I'm not in labor. And so I don't have to worry about it today. Today it's not happening. And then the day that it happened, I was so ready for them to be born. I was like, okay, great. Whatever you got to do to get them out.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean, I'm sure somewhere along the line there is that emotional attachment, but then you have to be guarded at the same time because it is not yours. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different feeling.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing that I have noticed after each time giving birth is, you know,
yeah.
there's a lot of hormones that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Postpartum, whether the baby is yours or not, the hormones happen. And so what I noticed after the first time was that I actually got more in tune with my son's needs.
Ah.
And so because my son was nonverbal at that point, he wasn't mm-hmm. a strong communicator yet. And he was communicating. I just didn't know what he was saying. But I remember, like, just laying next to him in bed, and he kind of made a noise, and it was like I knew that he was hungry, or I knew mm-hmm. that he was tired. And in a way that I hadn't known for a while, you know, that
mm-hmm.
and so every time I gave birth and I didn't have a new baby to take care of, I just poured all of that love into
mm-hmm.
my son, and it created a stronger bond for him, for me and him. And I think that that's a part of the reason why they want you to have your own children before you are a surrogate, because obviously there is this motherly love and there's this 9 months of carrying the baby. And and so it's, you know, they don't want to have a situation where the mom is going to want to keep the baby. The amount of times that I think that that's happened, it's something that is safeguarded against that. I've never heard that story. I've heard it kind of as a, like, well, what if you want to keep the baby? I've heard it as that, but I've never heard a news story where a surrogate tried to keep the baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, even in during COVID, there was several surrogate moms that helped care for the baby while the parents were trying to get into the country because there was the ban on travel.
Yeah.
So that caused a lot of problems for some surrogates and intended parents, but there were some surrogates that cared for the baby and there were other surrogates that let the agency take care of it. Agency did whatever they needed to do to make sure that the baby was cared for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the surrogate, you know, walked away from it. And if I was in that situation, I would probably be one of the moms that would let the agency handle it, because I don't know that I would want that time, because I had that hour with that first baby feeding it.
Yeah.
It would be so much harder to let him go afterwards.
Precisely. That's true. Very true. Yeah, I mean, you know, when we talk about emotional connection, because that's a toughie, so to speak, mm-hmm. and that's good that they have incorporated all that in a way in the contract to the best of the ability to comfort everyone concerned. So that's very, very interesting. And I'm glad the fact that you mm-hmm. also shared the fact that your surrogacy experiences help you in your personal motherhood journey that otherwise, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, there are books out there, but unless you experience it in real life, it's different.
Absolutely.
Very, very interesting. Do you have any advice for couples who are on the fence about going the surrogate route?
You know, the journey to being a parent is definitely not an easy one. And, you know, in my mind, I would think that surrogacy is almost a better route than adoption, because it's like there's a you're guaranteed a baby, and really you're not. Because I haven't been a an intended parent, I've been on the other side. My only advice is to find joy in the journey as best you can, because I think it's stressful for moms and dads having their baby not being grown inside their house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, the mom of the twins was the one that was lived the closest to me, and she would drive down for every doctor appointment, or at least every ultrasound. Towards the end, it was every doctor appointment. And she was fortunate enough to do that. A good friend of mine also had her son through surrogacy, and that was a 10 plus year long journey. You know, it's like the amount of patience that you have to have in this process. When I mentioned that it was like I decided to be a surrogate and 4 months later I was pregnant, number one, that's not a typical surrogacy journey to my knowledge. And number two, like, that couple had been waiting 30 years for their baby. And so my advice is, you know, take care of yourself, because it can be a long road that doesn't always end in a child, unfortunately.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. And I'm sure it is. It's because you talked about, when it's all said and done, how much connection do you want to have, and the experience in itself. So, wow. Very, yeah. Very interesting.
So I think I would add also that from the perspective of a surrogate, whatever relationship that you want with mm-hmm. the surrogate after the fact,
yeah,
be as transparent as you possibly can when in the beginning. And then if you change your mind, which happens,
yeah,
just
yeah.
be transparent at that point. You know, because I don't know that any of the parents that I had along the way changed mm-hmm. their mind with how they wanted to relate with me postpartum.
Right.
But after the second mom, when she, with the 1 year of updates and then radio silence, every
right.
interview I had after that, I told the family, whatever relationship you want with me postpartum is fine with me. But mm-hmm. if you change your mind, just tell me I changed my mind, so that mm-hmm. I'm not like being ghosted, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So true. What advice do you have for someone who is contemplating becoming a surrogate mom?
Do it. surrogate moms are so needed right now. It, as far as I'm concerned, it's really the best gift that one woman can give to another woman or mm-hmm. Or man, you know, that mm-hmm. really wants to be a surrogate. When my book is out, Creating Little Miracles, then read that. And that's my advice.
Yeah. Well, there's a very fine line from what I gather within this close to an hour here. You have the science of the equation, right? And then you also have the spiritual side of the equation. And mm-hmm. you can't really, to each is his own. Like I say, my spiritual progressive mom always remind me, you know, too much to the left, too much to the right, or whichever you want to look at it, north, south, or whatever. It's not good. Mm-hmm. In the end, the middle path is what makes a difference. It's the understanding, okay, that's a beautiful blend of spirituality and science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
which I think that our world is a beautiful blend of both. That we just mm-hmm. have to look for both.
Right. So that's the fascinating thing about it. And you having the opportunity to experience that, probably I would say disrespectfully again, it's having that moment in time to tap into both. You know what I'm talking about? Like, especially mm-hmm. like the last one you were talking about, the single mom that wanted to have a child and didn't work out, and then being told that, hey, he or she is coming.
mm-hmm.
And she arrived. And so that's a unique perspective, you know? And
yeah.
so anyone can take it any way they want from that perspective, so to speak, in their point of view. How has your fascinating journey as a daughter, mom, and surrogate mom contribute to your mom coaching profession?
You know, I have learned so much over the last 42 years about what motherhood is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a beautiful and unique journey for everyone. And it's not easy. And one thing I like to say is that we have an idea of what being a mom is going to look like, and then reality kicks us in the teeth. And maybe that's not a very positive thought, but it is the reality of life on this planet, that our expectations are rarely, if ever, met. And so do your best to, you know, enjoy the process. And I think that that's what I've learned all these years on this planet, is just do your best to enjoy the process and go with the flow as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 'Cause we really don't have much control. And so all we have control over is how we look at the situations that we're in.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Where can someone go to get more information about your services, listen to your podcast, and keep up with your latest happenings?
So I am on, my website is momsupportcorner.com, and I'm at momsupportcorner on all the social media, and my podcast is called Imperfect Momming, Better Parenting Through Self-Healing.
Wonderful. What's next for you?
What is next for me? I want to surrogate again, and I've agreed not to. The family agreed not to. But my next endeavor is getting my surrogacy book out there and seeing how many people I can get off the fence of. I've been thinking about being a surrogate. Into yes, I want to, or no, I don't, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a delicate balance too. I mean, it can be a financial, obviously a financial business, right? And then there's on the other side of the equation, you have that sort of the rewarding experience in gifting someone something special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a financial benefit to being a surrogate. It's, you know, kind of like making a year's salary in 9 months. And it's a job.
Mm-hmm.
So take that with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm. As we're coming close to the end of the hour, since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Recipe for living. You know, the last thing that I said that, you know, they say, like, when life is what happens when you're busy making other plans, or make a plan, and if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. You know, all of those are there to let you know that to some extent we don't have control over the things that that happen to us. And we do have control over what we do with the things that happen to us. So, even though there's a lot of pain and hurt that does happen, if you find the lesson inside of it and take that lesson and go teach someone else so that their journey isn't as hard, it gives a purpose to the thing that you've gone through.
Wonderful, wonderful. Alicia, thank you for the wonderful recipe for living and for spending this hour with me. I'm from My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me next Wednesday morning, May 15th at 10 a.m. Central Time, U.S. My guest will be Heather Gray. Heather is a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, best-selling author, podcast host, and speaker. Heather and I will be having a conversation about her remarkable life's journey and how to empower you with practical insights into diet, lifestyle, mindset, detox, and more. all based on her real life experiences overcoming health challenges, including Lyme disease and autoimmune conditions. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchenTalkRadio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Alicia, it's been a true pleasure. Thank you again and have a very wonderful, happy Mother's Day.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.